Chase Willie D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Derek Mason with you. Willie Donick at Morning Skate in Edmonton for the Predators and the Oilers tonight. I'll have pregame for you starting at 7 o'clock. We say hello to Mitch Light of The Athletic. He joins us now. Mitch, how are you?
I'm good, Chase. Hope you guys are doing well.
Doing fantastic. Just watching the NFL trade deadline. I want to start with a conversation we've had throughout the show. And this stems from Tony Romo on the CBS broadcast basically saying that don't be surprised if NFL teams start calling for Josh Heupel because of what he's done at Tennessee, rebuilding that program. The offense is obviously prolific. Derek, you know, says he doesn't think the offense is going to, you know, could translate to the NFL. He would have to adjust to the NFL. But this is year two. They're just now in the national conversation. They could potentially be number one, likely number two tonight with the college football playoff ranking as they have Georgia on tap this weekend. But what's kind of your thought on that if he could make the jump to the NFL like so many have tried to do?
Yeah, I must have missed that comment because I've not heard that. And that's interesting. Not enough of an X's and O's guru guy to say what can translate and what can't. I think there's a lot of Art Briles, Baylor, correct me if I'm wrong, Derek, but I think there's a lot of Art Briles, Baylor elements to the Tennessee offense. And not to overgeneralize and stuff, but some of those, you know, Bryce Petty was one. Some of those quarterbacks that came out of Baylor, you know, they struggled, couldn't make the transition. So, again, I don't want to, like, overstep my bounds. That's not the right way to say it, but say this could or couldn't work. A lot of times I look at it from a personality standpoint. Can guys make the transition? And I think Heupel does have the temperament to be an NFL coach. Some of the guys that you think don't are just the rah-rah guys and just the motivators and rally the troops and all that stuff. And I think, you know, his players like him, but I think he's just I like his demeanor from that regard. So be interesting to see what happens. I mean, you never know what I always say is you never know what makes a guy tick. Some guys just want to be college coaches, and they love it. Some guys, their dream is to be in the NFL, and I don't think we've seen much. You know, Heupel, I don't believe he's been in the NFL at all as a coach there. So obviously something to monitor, but I would put that in there. That would surprise me a lot if it happened in the next few years.
So the big story is, of course, that they will face Georgia, an eight-point dog. It's moved around a little bit in Athens, number one versus number two. And basically, if all goes to plan after this, a trip to Atlanta on the line for either team. We saw the upset over Alabama, which really put them on the map. They take care of business, no problem, against Kentucky. But I think we'd all agree this is Tennessee's biggest test, being on the road, going up against the defending national champion. What do you think of the matchup, Georgia-Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's fascinating. And you want to compare it to the Alabama game just because – that's the type of talent you're going to be seeing on the other side of the field. And the positive side for Tennessee, you know, I don't know if you guys share this opinion. Watching the Alabama game, I thought it was like Bryce Young was the player that kept Alabama in the game. Like, I thought he was fantastic in that game, especially in the final three quarters. Just like, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs made some plays, but it was just like if they had an average quarterback in that game, Tennessee wins by three or four touchdowns. Stetson Bennett is a good quarterback, but he's not Bryce Young. But then on the other, the bad news I would say is Georgia has a better supporting cast on offense, a more difficult to defend supporting cast. Like Brock Bowers, a tight end in Washington, especially Bowers, is so difficult to defend. It's like you can't really simulate what he does in practice because of his just unique physical skills. So I think he's a guy that they'll obviously Georgia will look to exploit in matchups. And they're so, as usual, they got three or four running backs, all averaging about 6 yards per carry. Wouldn't say they're elite at wide receiver, but they've obviously got good players there. So I would think Georgia is probably a little bit more difficult matchup, but from the one guy going to beat you, I'd be more worried about a Bryce Young than Stetson Bennett. Spread to me seems a little high just because maybe we're prisoners of the moment and how well Tennessee's been playing. I mean, I think I would pick Georgia to win the game, but nothing would surprise me in this one.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, so I'll use the wrestling analogy. Do you think this is a loser-leaves-town match, or
no,
if it's a close game that, you know, even if Atlanta doesn't happen for the loser, that they could still be in consideration for the playoff?
Well, I definitely don't think it's a loser-leaves-town. I think as long as the loser – it's a respectable performance, especially for Tennessee. See, Tennessee has that win against Alabama, and Tennessee needs Alabama to sort of keep winning. You know, I always talk about the NCAA tournament. When you're talking about bubble teams, like, what win do you have that no other bubble team has? Like, if, let's say, you know, a bunch of SEC teams and someone's won at Kentucky, you know, that's the, like, no one else in the country has that on their resume. No one's going to have a win against Alabama on their resume, like, a, you know, a team that Tennessee would be jockeying for. Now, Georgia, that win against Oregon, that dominating win in week one, which is looking better and better, that's a really good win, but I would still say beating Alabama is a better win there. So I think the, you know, the team that loses closely, they probably need things to happen, but I wouldn't come close to saying they're out of it by any stretch.
Look, I know it's still early to have this conversation, but I think the nightmare scenario for the committee would be, let's say Georgia wins this weekend, then they lose to Alabama in the SEC championship game, and you have all three with one loss. Then you have to sit there and you know, Ohio State runs the table. Let's say they win the Big Ten, so they're in, no problem. Then you have to decide, okay, what's a better resume? A one-loss SEC team that either lost the SEC championship or wasn't even in it, or an undefeated Clemson that won the ACC, or let's say even an undefeated TCU, which I don't believe has an argument in this because of the Big 12, and even a one-loss Pac-12 champion in USC. I don't envy the committee if it gets to that point.
And what, let's say Georgia's number one at that point. Is that part of your scenario?
Yeah.
That Georgia would. Yeah, so Georgia's number one, and Oregon continues to play well and dominates USC or UCLA again, who they dominated in the championship game. Then you've got a one-loss Pac-12 team. Their only loss was the number one team in the country. Sure, they got beat badly, but who's to say, you know, every other team would have lost that game badly. So, like, if I'm Oregon there, I'm saying, sure, we lost badly, but we're a completely different team. That was our first game, a new coach, Bo Nix's first game. Look what we've done in the Pac-12. So I think they would have a very strong case as well. So, you know, that's what we do at this time of the year, Chase, is we look at all the scenarios and kind of see what could go wrong or right, depending on your point of view. So it's easy to say it'll play itself out. I think it will play itself out. But what you just outlined there would definitely be very difficult for the SEC, for the committee, with those three SEC teams all with one loss sort of to each other.
We talk with Mitch Light of The Athletic. Now, Mitch, the college football rankings come out pretty soon here. And I think many people know who the top three are going to be. It's just how you put them in order. I've seen, you know, because I'm a Big Ten guy, so I watch the Big Ten. Because I'm here, I got to watch the SEC. From what I've seen from Georgia, Tennessee, Ohio State, and Michigan, and I'm not taking anything away from Clemson. I'm not. But to me, Tennessee is by far, not to say that they are head and shoulders above, but what I've seen this season, based on who they've played, I think they're the number one team in the country. Now, who you put at number two, I think Georgia's two, three, and four, you kind of work it out between Ohio State and Michigan. But I think it's clearly, to me, Tennessee one, Georgia two, and then you throw Ohio State three or Michigan three, it doesn't matter. But Tennessee has shown me with the schedule they've played, and they've had some hard teams that they played, but they went down to Pitt and beat Pitt early in the season. They beat the rival in Florida. They manhandled LSU. They beat Kentucky. I don't think anyone else in the country at this point has the resume that UT has.
I agree, and I will be surprised if they are not number one tonight. The committee has, in my opinion, done a good job, especially early on, rewarding teams based on what their accomplishments. They don't just fall. They don't just look at, oh, they're the number one team in the AP, or they've been number one AP. They're not doing rankings week to week. Like, if you're an AP voter, like, there's different philosophies on voting. If you're an AP voter and you have Georgia number one and they keep winning, there's an argument, okay, I'm not dropping them. I don't care how impressive this Tennessee team has been. But the committee's starting from scratch tonight. They're not relying on last week's rankings or rankings from 6 weeks ago. So there's really no rational decision not to have Tennessee number one based on all the things you said. Just, they have played more good teams than anyone. Now, I might think Ohio State's a better team. If they played tomorrow in a neutral field, I might bet on Ohio State, but that's not the, we're picking who we, you know, who's the kind of the most deserving in the rankings, and I think that would be Tennessee. And I'm with you. it doesn't 2-3-4. It's hard. I mean, I would probably put Ohio State 2, Georgia 3, and Michigan 4, but I would have no qualms. But I do think it's hard to argue right now that Tennessee, you know, should not be ranked number one.
Now, as far as the Heisman Trophy race is, do you still see it as Stroud 1 and then Hendon Hooker, or Stroud, Bryce Young, and then Hendon Hooker? Or do you have, at this point of the season, from what you've seen, that Hendon Hooker is number one, and then it's Bryce Young and Stroud, or Stroud and then Bryce Young? I think Bryce Young hurt himself because he missed the game, but that's not his fault. But when he came back, he was just as electrifying as he was before the injury.
Yeah, I have Hooker number one and Stroud two. Stroud was great in the second half against Penn State, struggled a little bit early. You know, he's only thrown 2 or 3 interceptions all year. You know, you can make the case that Bryce Young helped us. You know, this isn't an MVP, but if you're looking at his most valuable player, you can say that he kind of helped his cause by missing time, because we saw how he kind of the offense struggled. So he was great there. I did have, you know, we vote every week in a straw poll at The Athletic, the top three, and I did have to give in and not vote my guy Sam Hartman number three after the Wake Forest had 8 turnovers in the third quarter this week. I thought that'd be a little too much bias showing, so I did remove him. But, yeah, I mean, I think those are the top three guys. Blake Corum at Michigan, if Michigan, you know, continues to win, he's really good. Bo Nix, I mean, if they have some marquee wins down the stretch, wouldn't rule that out there, but I'd be shocked if it's not Hooker or Stroud right now.
Talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic. So Brian Harsin's shown the door at Auburn. They're going to be looking for a head coach. In your mind, Mitch, who you think the front runner will be or should be?
I don't know. I mean, so many possibilities there. I mean, I still think Matt Rule's a good coach. You know, obviously he was very good at Temple and Baylor, did not work out in the NFL. I think, you know, what's an SEC guy? Or, you know, was Josh Heupel an SEC guy beforehand? Well, he coached in Missouri, but, you know, you think of him more as Big 12 in Oklahoma. So I don't think you can, like, kind of worry about that. You know, Deion Sanders will get an interview. I'd be fascinated by that, especially someone who follows recruiting closely. There's no doubt he would recruit well and put that, not that Auburn's seemingly in a national spotlight, whether or not it's because they're good or whether or not it's because they're kind of a dumpster fire, but would definitely shine a light on that program there. So, you know, there will be a lot of good candidates. Matt Rule, to me, would be a really good fit there. I think he would win. I think if they can get everything aligned properly, I think he could bring some stability to that program there. But it's clearly, you know, for as much as we make fun of Auburn for all the shenanigans that go on there, it's an elite job. I mean, they've won a national title. They've played for a national championship. They've done it under different coaches. They had a coach in, you know, recently, Gus Malzahn, who, you know, Alabama's in the best dynasty they've ever had. And I don't have what he win. He beat Nick Saban 3 times. I mean, the numbers don't lie. You can win very big at Auburn. So they will attract a very good coach.
Off the top of your head, I was talking to somebody about this last night. Off the top of your head, can you think of an example of a head coach that's been at 3 SEC programs? There's a lot of twos, but I can't think of 3. Because, you know, we were throwing out Lane Kiffin. This would, if he left for Auburn, that'd be his third. You know, I don't know. I don't know if Dan Mullen would.
Bear Bryant was at Texas A&M. They weren't in the SEC, though, so that's, I'm cheating there.
Yeah.
He was at Kentucky and
Alabama. I don't count that.
Steve Sloan was at Ole Miss and Vanderbilt. Obviously, Jared DiNardo, Vanderbilt, and LSU.
Saban was LSU,
way,
Bama.
Yeah. I don't know why I was spacing. As I was speaking, I was trying to think of other examples. Actually, Lane Kiffin would be the very top of my list, too. I've done a 180 on Lane Kiffin, you know, as far as he's still – I was going to say he's matured a lot, which he has, but he still kind of has that – I don't know, the way – social media and all that stuff. He can poke the bear and all that stuff. But I think there's no denying he's a fantastic coach right now, and I think he would win at Auburn. So I would put him near the top of my list, too. But I will look that up. It seems like I should know that if there's been someone who's coached at 3 SEC schools, but that would be kind of wild if it came to fruition.
Do you think, real quick, do you think Dan Mullen gets another sniff in the SEC or no?
I don't know about the SEC. I'm a Mullen fan. I think he's a really good coach. Just kind of a confluence of events there at Florida that did not work out. It's somewhere like Arizona State to me, where, you know, recruiting is important everywhere, but you can win at Arizona State. I think he would attract good players from Southern California, and I think he'd coach him up. I'd be surprised if he's not a Power 5 head coach again, but I don't know about the SEC.
Awesome. Appreciate it as always, Mitch. Good conversation. We'll do it again next week.
All right. Take care, guys. See ya.
Mitch Light from The Athletic talking college football. We'll have Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll get more into Tennessee, Georgia coming up next. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 125, 106.3 The Game. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 125, 106.3 The Game. Clark Lee coming up in just a few minutes, Vanderbilt football coach. Also, Stillman and Company at 2 o'clock as they'll react to the final hour of the trade deadline and whether the Titans do anything. Chase Claypool's been traded from Pittsburgh to Chicago, which is pretty significant. TJ Hockenson goes from Detroit to Minnesota. Those are the moves that have happened today. Of course, Roquan Smith was traded yesterday from Chicago to the Baltimore Ravens, but we'll see if something else comes through before the 3 o'clock Central Time trade deadline. But in college football, the College Football Playoff committee will release their rankings tonight. If you look at the AP Top 25, you have Georgia still at number one, Tennessee, Ohio State tied at two, then Michigan at four, followed by Clemson, Alabama, TCU, Oregon, USC, UCLA, the top 10. I'm with you guys. I feel like that if you look at the resume and what Tennessee has done to this point, they should be number one.
Yeah, they should be. If you look at, you know, the teams they played and the teams they beat, and I know, you know, people look back and say, well, they barely beat Pitt. Well, that still was a tough game because they had to go to Pennsylvania to play that game in front of the biggest crowd that University of Pittsburgh has had in a very long time. And they still managed to go there and beat, at the time, the 17th ranked team. Then they come back against their heated rival in Florida, who was number 20 at the time, and they beat Florida. Then people were wondering, man, are they going to have a letdown against LSU, who was ranked 25th at the time? They mopped LSU up. It wasn't even close. And then everybody saying, here's where they stumble. The mighty Nick Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide. Well, you know what? Alabama gave Tennessee everything that they had, and Tennessee still managed to pull out that game and win. That right there should be enough. And then they beat Kentucky, who, you know.
Convincingly.
Exactly. It wasn't even close. And I know a lot of people, oh, this might be a trap game. This might be a trap game. How is it going to be a trap game to a team that has already played Pitt, Florida, LSU, and Alabama? How is this a trap game? They know exactly what they're going to get when they face Kentucky. And they went, and Kentucky came into town, and they mopped them up just like they mopped up everybody else. Nobody in college football at this point has a resume better than this, and I don't think no one will, even with Georgia. Georgia might, if they can beat UT, then turn around and beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. They've already beat Oregon. That still doesn't match up to what Tennessee has already played, to me, at least.
Right.
So I can't see why the committee or anyone else would vote UT number two or number three. It's number one, or what are you thinking?
So for me, I would probably go Tennessee one, Georgia two, Ohio State three. Do you think Michigan's four or Clemson?
I think Michigan's four.
Yeah.
I've seen both teams play.
You can make an argument that Georgia and Ohio State could flip.
You can.
That Ohio State could be two, Georgia three.
But I think Georgia has played.
That Oregon win is looking better and better.
Yeah. Ohio State hasn't had a win like that all year.
No.
Because
Penn State gave them a game.
Yeah, Penn State gave them a game. They pulled away at the end. But Penn State had already lost the game coming into the battle contest
to Michigan.
But even with that, so you have Michigan and Penn State that you basically have to play. And then whoever's in the West, I think whoever comes out of you know, Michigan or Penn State, they're going to win a Big Ten championship. So beside you playing, meaning both Michigan and Ohio State, beside Ohio State playing Oregon, who else have they played? Well, they would have played Michigan, and it depends on whether, even if you win, you've only played really two teams.
Mm-hmm.
Two. That's
right.
It.
Right.
Well, yeah, I'm not going to – Penn State is no slouch, but okay, three. But that gauntlet, even in Michigan, say the same thing. Well, actually, Michigan's will be worse because they really haven't played anyone up until this point. So to me, Tennessee, Georgia, then O State. Now it can flip. Whoever wins the O State Michigan game, now it's flip. But then here's where I think the sort of. This is where the argument will come, and then everybody will start getting back into, I can't wait till this change to 6, 8, 12 teams. Whoever loses between Michigan and Ohio State, they will argue until the cows come home that they deserve to be in the college football playoffs. And no, you don't. If you don't even get to, considering how not strong the Big Ten is this year, if you don't get to the Big Ten championship and win, then you really don't – you can talk loud, but you really don't have any sort of like case to make. You could talk loud all you want to, but only thing I need to do is put your resume on the board against Tennessee, Alabama, and Georgia, and it doesn't match. Now, I don't know if it matches up with Clemson because I hadn't watched a lot of Clemson play. And who they're, you know, I don't think the, you know, ACC is that tough either, you know? So,
right.
I don't know. It's it. To me, UT number one, Georgia two, Ohio State three, Michigan four.
There's been another big trade real quick in the NFL. Adam Schefter reporting that Denver is dealing linebacker Bradley Chubb to the Dolphins for a package that includes a 2023 first-round pick that Miami acquired from San Francisco, sources tell ESPN. So we will keep watching the trade deadline before it closes at 3 o'clock Central Time as another big one has happened. But coming up next, we'll talk to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach. We will do that next. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Derek Mason hanging out with you. As we do every Tuesday at 1:30, we say hello to Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee, who's on the line with us. Coach, how are you?
Doing great. Good afternoon to you guys.
So, had another off week. How was that for you? What was kind of your message to your team coming off a really close loss to Missouri? I know that was one that you guys were there in it until the end, but what was your message to your team for the bye week?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to all of us. You know, we're competitors and we want to win, and you know, it's still the message and the lesson is still, you know, in the moment, doing what winning requires. You know, I was proud of the way we battled back. I felt particularly the way we battled back in the second half on defense. I felt the defense gave us evidence, and that kind of was the breath of life into the sideline. What we need to do is take the field before the evidence and know that we have the power and the strength to dictate terms. We've shown this now in our conference in two games, just we haven't been able to do it over four quarters. And so that's the message to the team. I think the other message is that we keep hammering away, you know, that the breakthrough's coming. And what I know to be true is that, you know, the decision, the choice to pick up the hammer and to keep hammering is the one that matters most. And these guys, look, they're resilient and they're in the fight with us, and I thought we had a good week last week, and I thought we've had a good start to this week. And obviously, get to come back home and playing against a good South Carolina team, and excited to have the chance to compete.
We've talked to you about this, you know, since you've taken this job and you've been coming on with us. That you know, you knew Rome's not built in a day. This was going to be a process that was going to take, you know, game by game, day by day, year by year, all those things. So what is the challenge and the balance for you of You're trying to win games right now. You're trying to live in the now, like you just said, but also knowing that this is going to be an ongoing process that you're building for seasons to come and not just right now. So how do you balance all of that?
You know, I don't see the two as mutually exclusive. I think, you know, we're not making short-sighted decisions week to week. You know, we're trying to build mindset and culture into our team and into our program. And we're doing that successfully. I don't know that it, you know, it's taken, you know, like, you want it now, you want it tomorrow, you want it yesterday, you know. I mean, that mindset will kill you when the situation requires some patience. What I'm really interested in with this team and in this season is that we break through the mentality that game day happens to us. You know, I think one thing that I learned from my time away from the program, you know, from when I played to when I returned, is that, you know, Vanderbilt University and Vanderbilt football has everything that it needs here. There's nothing here that keeps it from being as successful as any other program. I think specifically when you talk about the change in leadership and the direction of the university and Candace Lee's vision for the program and the facilities on the horizon, it's all coming. We have to get out of our own way. And I say that from a standpoint of, you know, I think, you know, a winning team and a winning culture looks at Saturday and finds ways to exert their will, that finds ways to bring their power, finds the win through the circumstance or the situation. And we're still training that as a team, you know, and I think, you know, again, learning competitive excellence, learning how the back and forth of competition, right? It's not, you know, it's not going to be every game that we come out and dominate from snap one to the finish, but you know, you find the comfort, you find your rhythm in that back and forth nature of these conference games, and you trust your process and you stay faithful to your process. And over time that produces the breakthrough. That mentality, will serve us now. And obviously that mentality will serve our future too. And, you know, we're really conscious of, you know, not just, the mindset we're building for the season, but the youth that's in our program and what they're hearing from us day in, day out about, you know, the things that are both important now and that will help us launch into the potential of our program over time.
You haven't been home a lot either, Coach. I mean, that it's when you kick off on Saturday, it will be almost a month since you last played at home, having to go on the road. So how beneficial is it to have three of your last four games of the season at home? And also, how important is it for the fan base to show out for that?
Well, we certainly enjoy playing in Nashville. Certainly enjoy playing at home. This weekend in particular, being our salute to service game, is an opportunity for us to honor the men and women who've served our country. And we've talked about that over the last 2 weeks. You know, and that's important. You know, as far as the football goes, though. You know, this is a team that is learning how to compete, learning how to win. And so, you know, we need to have the mindset that no matter what, where the ball's put down, we're showing up to bring our identity. And, you don't have ownership over an identity until you're committed to it consistently. And that's, again, been part of the message this week, which is, you know, your behavior is way ahead of your results. Your behaviors are way ahead of your success. And, you know, if we're not making those micro adjustments to our behavior day in, day out with the information we know and what we've learned about our team, then we're not going to see improvement in the performance. However, if we're committed to that and we're able to do that, then again, you know, slowly but surely, we'll build this program into a force. And, you know, I believe that those results can be felt immediately. You know, that's independent of where the game's being played. You know, that's our focus, and that's what we are giving our attention to this week.
We're talking with Vanderbilt's head football coach, Clark Lee. Coach, you just said something that was really good, your behavior. You know, because a lot of times, you know, these kids want the success before they even show successful behavior. But you know, as a coach, that, you know, sometimes – you're going to have to show that behavior first and understand it and realize it before that success comes. And I'm pretty sure your guys are starting to realize that and will realize that. And I say that to say this. Are you looking moving forward now with four games remaining? And I know you don't want to look ahead. You're just thinking about the next game. But is this an opportunity for your leaders on your team to show the behavior that you just mentioned to us that will ultimately lead to winning?
Well, absolutely. And I mean, we meet with our captains every week, and we also have kind of a leadership workshop weekly, independent of my meeting, that goes on just to build that kind of foundational leadership. I have a core group that is forming and that has formed and that I believe embodies the program that, you know, we want to be. And I think that the next step is just that player-to-player accountability. It's being comfortable in confrontation with our peers. And again, confrontation doesn't always have to be yelling and screaming. It doesn't have to be – it doesn't even have to be emotional, but there has to be a level of demand. And what the vision for the program is that we have 110 guys that are two standard every day, and that we're very specific around what those standards require. And then, you know, from there you have, you know, a core group that's moving that standard forward every day too. And you know, we're, as would be expected in year two, you know, I think we're closer to unearthing that identity, and yet we're also kind of in the throes of the final process to solidify it. And that's I think been reflected in some of our inconsistent play. You know, it's when you have an identity, it doesn't matter if you have your A game, your B game, or your C game, you're going to show up and you're going to play at your best. You know, when you don't have an identity, then you react to the results of each play. And so your A game becomes your C game, because mentally, you know, you're holding on to past plays or past performance, which become like weighted vests to you as you try to play in the present. And so again, these are all things we're learning, but what you said, is exactly where the focus is. It's you know, the behaviors that align with our goals and vision for the program. It's being, you know, meticulous in defining those behaviors and particularly what those behaviors aren't, and then making sure we're pulling those every day, not just from ourselves, but from our teammates. You know, these are opportunities for learning and teaching. But you know, winning doesn't just happen. And it certainly doesn't just happen because you follow a schedule, you know, every day that has you show up and practice. And winning is about an attitude. Winning is about a mindset. Winning is about an identity that, you have to work to create and hold consistently over time. And, as you do that, you know, it shows up for you on Saturday, and again, it'll carry you through to a winning performance, even when you're not at your best.
Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee here with us. Coach, best of luck this weekend against South Carolina, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Thanks a lot.
All right. Absolutely. Yep. Clark Lee joins us every Tuesday at 1:30, talking Vanderbilt football with him. We will recap some of the trades that have happened as the deadline is looming. Will the Titans make a move before 3 o'clock? We'll do that coming up next, but I'm here to talk about Superbook Sports, because when it comes to sports, it's all happening right now. There's football, both professional and college, basketball, hockey, and soon enough, the World Cup. There's no better place to wager on all of that than Superbook Sports. It's become my official sports book. When you sign up, deposit, and wager all in the same day, Superbook will give you a bonus up to $1,000. It's that easy. When the sports world is busy, it's time to get busy winning some money. If you want to wager on Tennessee, Georgia this weekend, Tennessee getting 8 points right now on the Superbook Sports app. Sign up, deposit your money, make your wager. Boom, it's that easy. So download the Superbook Sports app or visit superbook.com to wager and win today. Visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Chase Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Derek Mason here with you. Nick Kieser, intern Connor on the ones and twos behind the glass. NFL trade deadline, 3 o'clock Central Time today. We've seen a flurry of moves, though, Derek, as Bradley Chubb just got dealt. Chase Edmonds a part of that deal, too. So he's going back to Denver. Chubb coming to Miami with a flurry of picks as well. But Miami, that's an interesting move for them, adding a pass rusher like Bradley Chubb. I like that for them.
Yeah, again, they are, you know, just like everybody else. They want to win now. And, you know, I think the last time we spoke on this in regards to the Dolphins' defense, they were one of the top-ranked defenses in the National Football League, at least against the run. So now they're adding a guy like Bradley Chubb, which they believe will not only help in the run, but help in the pass as well because he can get to the passer. So this is a good move by the Miami Dolphins. They already got a high-powered offense. So right now they're just looking to solidify more so on the defensive side of the ball. So we'll see. Teams are making moves. And they're trying to put themselves closer and closer to, you know, to that Super Bowl window. They saw the Rams do it last year, and they're thinking, why not us?
Sure.
You know, so I don't blame them for making this move. This is a move I think they needed to help bolster that defense and kind of go from there. Yeah, they're the tops in the NFL. I think they're top five defense when it comes against the run. They struggle against the pass. Maybe Bradley Chubb can help him out with that also. But these teams are like, listen, you know, whether it's the Minnesota Vikings, whether, you know, it's the Miami Dolphins, these teams are saying this, we have an opportunity. We have the pieces. We just need to add one more guy or two more guys to help us get to where we want to go, at least have an opportunity, a good opportunity to get to the Super Bowl, not just we could make it if this happened and this happened. No, when you start adding these type of guys to the team, then you open up the realization of you going to the Super Bowl becomes closer. It becomes a closer reality than not when you add, whether it's Claypool with the Claypool went to where did Claypool go? What did they trade him to?
Chase Claypool, Bears.
Bears. Now, the Bears need a little bit more, but I think theirs was for more so for the future. Or, you know, the Vikings, by getting their tight end, they are thinking, hey, listen, we're closer. We've put ourselves closer to the Super Bowl than further away by the trades that we made today. So
I think ultimately the Titans aren't going to do anything.
No, Titans are not going to do anything. They don't want to give up any picks.
No, but we'll see. I mean, there's been a couple of surprise moves that have popped out.
We got another hour, right?
Another hour. I don't see it. I kind of look at it as if they were going to do something, they would have done it already. Mm-hmm.
Or
that's kind of how I feel.
Or if they do, it's not going to be a significant, you know, this huge trade. It's going to be a depth piece that they potentially go get in the trade. So, but you see all these teams that are willing to, you know, will and deal, whether it's Brandon Cook still hadn't been dealt, but we got an hour left. You know, Carolina said they may be willing to deal more people. So you just never know. But I can't see Titans being a major player in a marquee player or a guy that can, you know, help them further their cause at making the Super Bowl.
Real quick, we got to do trivia. We got to give away a pair of Preds tickets. Pair of Preds tickets to see the Predators take on the Rangers at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday, November 12th. It's going to be a Saturday night in Smashville. The Preds Foundation will be hosting Second Harvest Food Drive. You can donate non-perishable food items at the game or visit NashvillePredators.com/food drive. And also, they're going to give away the first 10,000 fans in the building will receive a Preds luggage tag presented by BNA Nashville Airport. So this is the question. as the Titans get ready to take on the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead. You may remember this. December 18th, 2016, the Titans played their coldest game in franchise history with a kickoff temperature at Arrowhead of 1 degree.
Ooh.
The Titans won on a 53-yard field goal as time expired. Who kicked it? Who was the kicker that hit the 53-yard field goal to give the Titans the win in Kansas City, December 18th, 2016? 615-737-1025. You must call and tell Nick Kieser. Do not text. You must call and tell Nick Kieser the answer. Mm-hmm. Who kicked the 53-yard field goal as time expired to give the Titans a win in Kansas City in 2016? First person to get that will win a pair of tickets to see Preds Rangers on November 12th. So there you go.
There you go, people.
So we've made our official predictions. No trades for the Titans, or I'm saying we have. My official is they won't make a trade. Mm-hmm. Tennessee going to be number one tonight?
I think so. I truly believe that. I think they should be. They've earned that number one spot. Not to say that Georgia's, you know, not a top tier team. They are. But I don't think they've, you know, their resume isn't like the Vols' resume.
If you're Josh Heupel, this is the coaching Jedi mind trick. Mm-hmm. Do you want to be number one tonight, or would you like to be number two so you have bulletin board material? Not that you need any more, mm-hmm. but have that like, hey, let's go this weekend.
They don't respect
show
us.
Show them we're number one.
You know, you know what? It's going to whatever team falls to number two. They're going to use it as motivation in this game.
They don't believe in you.
Yeah.
They don't think you're in.
Georgia's going to say, if we're number two, oh, you won a champion, and they still don't believe?
Coach, we're the number two team in the country. That's first
exactly.
loser.
Exactly.
They don't believe in you.
If you ain't first, you're last.
That's right.
So,
you want to be number two, son? Is that what you want to be?
I mean, I wouldn't say it would hurt if they were number two. We'll hear a bunch of all fans, I tell you that. You know, the next day
they get a little chirpy.
Yeah. Oh man, they disrespecting us. Ain't no way George's resume is better than ours. And you would be absolutely right by saying that.
Sure.
So with all that being said, I expect the Orange to be number one tonight after the college football
orange.
Playoff rankings Community. Come out.
Yep. All
so
right.
There you go, Big Orange.
We will see. Coming up next, Stillman and Company, they'll have a breakdown of the trade deadline, the final hour. Will the Titans do anything before 3 o'clock? Also, join me at 7 o'clock tonight, Preds pregame, as the Preds will take on the Edmonton Oilers. We're back at it tomorrow at 10, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
We out.